So, welcome back. This is term one, number four of the Shiurim on Keheles. And last time we got to Perek Aleph, that's chapter one, Pasuk Tes, that's verse nine. And we started it. We started talking about it, but now we're going to go into it. Now, if you remember, essentially there's going to be three themes to the first perek. So the first theme was, is it all worth it? Is it all worth creation? And the seeming answer is no, unless you devote yourself to Torah and mitzvahs. That's theme one. Physicality is in and of itself futile, unless you devote it to Torah and mitzvahs. We even talked about that man is less worthy than steam that comes out the top of a pot. Unless he does something, he's like no different from any other atom or piece of dust floating about the universe. Unless he does something to justify his position. Then we started this second set of themes. And that's the concept that the soul has to sometimes come back to Earth to get stuff done that it missed in previous goes round, or to fix up damage it may have caused up previously. All of this is only in order to be able to give the soul better repose and a better place, as it were, in Olam Haba. And we discussed the concept of reincarnation versus resurrection. Resurrection being in Olam Haba, while reincarnation is in Olam Hazeh. Olam Haba being the world after it's been purified of evil, while Olam Hazeh being this world right here, right now, when you come back for a second run. And he kind of lamented the fact that you may have to come round for several runs to get things fixed. And then we moved on to verse 9, which is, there's a lot going on here. If I can also, don't forget that I've got to try to give you the medrash about pigs. If I miss the whole thing about pigs, I've got to come back to it. Don't let me forget that. You know, just send a thing saying you were going to tell us about the pigs. I may forget it because there's a lot of things to do. But we said in Pasuk Tes, which, by the way, is where the Medrash Rabbah talks about pigs. It says in a Perek Tes, Ma shahaya hu shiyeh, very famously, that which has been is that which will be. Uma shna asa hu shiyeh aseh, and that which has been done is that which will be done. V'ain kol chodosh, and there ain't nothing new, tachas hashomesh, under the sun. It's a world famous pasuk. Jews and Gentiles know this. There's nothing new under the sun. It's become like a euphemistic like thing to say, you know, well, I've seen that before kind of thing. Now, we were talking about the fact that there is a purpose and a reason to the existence of the world, that it's there as an arena for you to be able to earn justificational points, essentially. And we also discussed in the previous Pesukim why the soul must return sometimes to earth to achieve perfection and earn its place in Olam Haba. Olam Haba is not where you go when you die. That's Olam HaNeshamos. I'm talking Olam Haba is post-resurrection existence in a physical world. Now, during its times, soveiv, spinning, processing, revolving, veering around the world as it comes back and goes back and comes back and goes back, it's always got to toil in Torah and mitzvahs during that time. And it shouldn't waste time on mundane matters. Again, as we said earlier, that people should view their life on earth as a business trip. When you go on business rather than pleasure, you pack in as much as you can on your timetable to be as productive as possible for whatever endeavor it is you're going there for. So if you're going to sell diamonds, you do everything you can to organize as many diamond sales. You don't say, well, while I'm here, shouldn't I go to Alton Towers and go on the roller coasters? No, now's not the time to do that. Now's the time to meet this guy who could sell a lot of diamonds in Hatton Garden for you. That's the person you need to meet. Now, but what about the roller coasters? The fact that there are roller coasters shows there are distractions in the world. And there are, as he's going to discuss. In fact, he turned his mind to these distractions, as we'll learn in the next few psukim. This is Solomon himself who said, let's go and learn about other stuff. Now, the question is, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Tzadi Aleph, which is 91, Omid Aleph, side A. And it says, what has not yet been done will come to be. God's going to make new things on planet Earth. And what's here already, all the more so it's going to be here again. Quoting this Pasuk, quoting Pasuk 1:9 of Keheles. So the Medrash Rabbah on Keheles in the third perek, Tesvav 3:15, it says that if a person turns around to you and says, oh, this whole thing of Tchias HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead, that's a brand new thing. It can't be that Solomon is talking here about the resurrection, because the resurrection is brand new. Says Keheles Rabbah, nope. Here's the answer. Eliyahu resurrected a boy who died. And that boy grew up to become Yonah, the famous Jonah, Jonah in the fish. He resurrected that kid. Now, Elisha, who was Eliyahu's top student, thought, if my Rebbe does the same thing, I'll do the same thing. And there was a boy that died in the place where he was staying. He was staying in, when he travelled, he used to go around staying in people's houses. And this lady's son died. And he resurrected that boy because his Rebbe did it. Got to do like your Rebbe. So he resurrected the boy in the same manner that Eliyahu resurrected Yonah. Who was that boy? That boy became none other than Habakkuk. Habakkuk, who was one of the, contemporaneous prophets of Jonah. They're both, Yonah and Habakkuk, are both part of the Trei Asar, the 12 minor prophets. And they prophesied at the same time. So think about the school. Eliyahu, Elisha, Yonah, Habakkuk were all in the same school of prophets. They were all in the same shnid, they were all in the same branch, as it were, of prophet. And they used to teach each other. They used to teach other people as well. They had a school going, an academy. There's nothing new. Ezekiel, Yechezkel, went back in the dry bone incident. He went back and resurrected the entire Shevet Ephraim, who left, that's the tribe or clan of Ephraim, who left Egypt early, miscalculating the deadline. There's a group of Jews who miscalculate the coming of Mashiach, think their Geulah is coming, but actually Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the Mashiach of that generation, hadn't happened yet. They left early, they were killed by the Philistim, their bodies were left out in the sun to rot. So much so, God said, I don't want to take Klal Yisrael by the most quick route up the coast into Israel, because they'll see their dead brethren lying out strewn in the desert, and they'll not feel very comfortable about that turnaround and run back to Egypt. So you know what? I'll take them on a circuitous route through the Sinai Peninsula, then we'll dodge that, go all the way around through Jordan and pop in through the Eva Yard, crossing the Eva Yard and crossing the Jordan River. We're going that way round. We're coming from the east rather than up the coast on the west, which would make sense. Now, problem. You can't not have a whole Shevet complete. You've got to have all the clans complete. So Yechezkel, over 1,000 years later, was told to go and resurrect all those unfortunate Jews who were killed by the Philistim. And he did so. He went there, he prophesied, and everyone came back, bone to bone, sinew to sinew, famously. All but one. One guy didn't get up. And Yechezkel turned around to Hashem and said, Rabbeinu Shalom, you asked me to resurrect these people, which I've done, but one guy didn't get up. And Hashem bellowed at Yechezkel. He charged ribbus. He charged interest. He shall not live. From here we learn out, says the Medrash Rabbah, that anyone that charges or pays another Jew an interest payment forfeits their place in the resurrection and therefore Olam Haba. a very precarious thing. You can lose your whole Olam Haba for a quid. Amazing. Doesn't matter what else you've done. You can lose it for that, which is why it's so important if you're taking a loan to get a Heta Iska, to do what you can to sign a document to make sure that you are not paying or charging Jews ribbis. Interesting, huh? Oh, that's just another example. So, what? Eliyahu resurrected Yonah, Elisha resurrected Habakkuk, Yechezkel resurrected the entire group of the Shevet Ephraim. So it's not a new idea, says Kehelas Rabbah, quoted from this Gemara in Sanhedrin, saying, don't think it's a new thing. It's not a new thing. Resurrection isn't a new thing. In fact, any sage mentioned in the Gemara, we have a tradition was capable of the resurrection of the dead. So much so, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato wrote a sefer called Mesillas Yesharim, Paths of the Just. And it's a brisa, it's an external piece of Tanaic material that was left out of the compilation of the Mishnah, that teaches you how to go through 13 steps of self-perfection, the last one being the key to life and death. If you get to that level, you'll be able to resurrect people too. It's just a method to be able to get to that level. It's a book written to get you to the level so you can resurrect them too. It's no great shakes resurrecting the dead. Anyone could do it. Anyone mentioned the Gemara could do it. It's not a great, it's just normal. Amazing. So it's not a new idea. And you shouldn't be surprised that the soul returns to the world to perfect itself in a reincarnation, or that the bodies of the righteous will be resurrected, because what has been will be. The soul of a person, your soul, has already been. As it's interesting in Bereishis, Beis Zayin, that's Genesis 2:7, it says, and man became a living soul. That very soul will be in the future. What has been done is that which will be done. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you will become a living soul in Olam Haba. It's going to be the same one. This very same soul I'm creating today will be the same one in Olam Haba. And he said, let us make man. So what's going to be? HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying that I'm going to clothe you in an extremely angelic suit. Adam's body was transparent and shone. So too the body after the resurrection. It's nothing new. Adam Rishon had that before the sin. Things are just essentially going to go back to the way they were before he ruined it. We think now that in the ruined state, this is normal. And therefore anything like that is abnormal. It's just the opposite. Adam Rishon, when he was made by God, was normal. He then ruined it. We're abnormal. We're in an abnormal state. And because we're here for 6,000 years, we think, oh, this has got to be the new normal. It's not normal. This is all abnormal. The whole thing is bidyeved. The whole thing is post facto. It's not the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu originally created it. He created the propensity, the ability for this, should you muck it up. But this is not normal. Normal is the way God made it. We're now the way Adam, as it were, made us. Adam shattered that ability, and God, as it were, had to pick up the pieces, saying, okay, you know, give yourself a week. 6,000 years is a week. 1,000 years is one divine day, right? Tehillim. Tehillim Tzadi, Psalms 90. 1,000 years is but a day. What does that mean? 6,000 years is a week. All right, you're not ready to come for this Shabbos, come for next Shabbos. Get yourself sorted. Why can't the soul go upstairs and just chill out there? Why does it keep having to come back? What does he mean? The Ein Kol Chodosh Tachas HaShemesh. Ain't nothing new under the sun. That means the higher, in the higher regions, above the sun, there is something new. Under the sun, there's nothing new. But above the sun, plenty of newness. What's going on? The more you learn Torah, and the more you do mitzvahs down here, the greater the spiritual light which radiates in the upper world that's created by you. You can't see it, but it's a new kind of light. It's a light that only you can make. There's no way you can see it because you're not in that world right now. It's like one of those divers with a tube of air, deep sea divers. They can't see what's going on in the boat above. They're busy fixing all the pipelines. There's no way they can see what's going on above. But above, they can see all the electricity turning on. that he's fixing downstairs. Now, there's no way he can see all the light bulbs going on. He's just fixing the cabling. But upstairs on the boat, they see all the lights. They're going, yeah, he's doing it. It's amazing. That's brand new. Under the sun, down here in the deep sea diving, in the mine, you can't see anything. Upstairs, we're getting all the produce of the mine. The miners can't see that. They're busy at the mine face, digging. The Torah and the mitzvahs that you generate while you're down here remain forever as a spiritual inspiration upstairs in a world above the sun. But that benefit, you must understand, is ultimately yielded by you in Olam Haba, and it's infinite. But it is completely beyond your comprehension at the moment, which is fine. It doesn't have to be within your comprehension. In fact, if it was, it would alter and shift your free will, your bechira. You wouldn't be able to make a proper decision. If you saw exactly what a mitzvah and a avera did, you'd go insane. You know, I could understand a guy who just went around shooting everyone that doesn't keep mitzvahs immediately. I could understand. If you really saw what's going on and you saw what sins actually do, you'd think that anyone that's sinning is a terrorist. You would, because you could see it. Guy could go mad. You can't live like that here. You've got to be decent. You've got to walk around in like a regular way. You can't do it. You can't see it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's clothed you. He doesn't want you to see it. Also, how can you show God obedience unless you don't know what's going on? If all you ever do is what you know to be true, then essentially you're guided only by your intellect and perception. The Reform wash their hands before bread. Why? Makes sense. Keep your hand clean. Very good. The Jews were onto something. Hand hygiene. Hand hygiene. Very good. Very good. Very good. However, Birkas Kahanim, the priestly blessing, oh, we don't do that anymore. Why not? Mumbo jumbo. Ugh, we just dropped that. It's silly. What's going on there? I don't understand it. So I dropped it. What you're really making God in such a temple is your intellect. If I understand it, I accept it, I'll do it. If I don't understand it, it must be meaningless junk. Or it's not there. Or it's kept by primitives. It's very interesting that. What about quantum mechanics? You didn't know about that 10 years ago. Ah, but it's here now, yeah. If I don't get it, I ain't doing it. Now, the Torah tells you, keep shatness. Don't mix wools of linen and wool together. Don't mix those fibres. Why? It's none of your business. Just get on with it. A good soldier can't ask his general every single time, why do I have to run over that hill? Because I told you to. Yeah, but what's the point? If I don't agree with the rationale for running over the hill, I won't run over it. Is that a good soldier? Real obedience, which, by the way, is the only commodity we have to give, everything else God has got, can only really be earned if we follow precepts that aren't immediately revealed. Now, they will be, and some of them are very intellectualizable. But in truth, all of them have a secret depth to them which we can't understand, and many of them are unintellectualizable from the get-go, such as the Parah Aduma, famously, the red heifer, which makes everything impure that is pure and everything pure that is impure. It just doesn't make sense, even according to the laws of the Torah. It doesn't make sense. So the soul is recycled in this system more and more and more so that the light that you generate, the mitzvahs you do, become more and more and more refined as you go. You don't realize that, but you're going through multiple stages of refinement. It's interesting, I took my kids to Wales and we saw a blacksmith make a blade. And the blacksmith, after he made the blade, he put it back in the fire. It was fully good to go. We said, what are you doing? He goes, I'm tempering the blade. Then he took it out, then he put it back in, and he says, now I'm hardening it. But it was done. He goes, yeah, but it's brittle and it won't, tempering it will make it like nice and spongy. It will like be springy, and hardening will mean it won't shatter. There's a difference between tempering and hardening. But each time that the blacksmith put the blade back in the furnace, it seemed like a waste. You got a perfectly good blade, you're just heating it up. Then he quenched it, he put it in oil, and the oil burst into flames as he did it. It was a very exciting thing to see. It's like, wow, what are you doing? But that was a key part. So too the soul looks like a perfectly good blade. Good to go. Back in you go, into the furnace you go. Why? Tempering. Makes you better. You're going to be a more useful blade. Okay, you're back. Very good. Go back in, hardening. Why? It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Now, that does not make sense to someone who is unlearned and sees that blade. There's no need. It's perfectly utilizable now. It looks like a knife. Put a handle on it, you're good to go. Not so. You need constant refinements. Now, when you go upstairs, there could be Gehenim in between to cut off any dross, to get rid of any impurities, like on a piece of metal comes out of the furnace, he scraped it, all this kind of black flaky stuff going, which was the metal. Got to get all that off, then put it back in. Same thing. It's just a system of purification. That which has been done is that which will be. Right. So where's my bell? Oh, I still don't have my bell. Every time I say, where's my bell? I think I've never had my bell. I always keep saying, where's my bell? This is so not like Esther. Esther was so much fun. There's a Haman, and there's a Mordechai, and a Achashverosh, and there's an Esther, and there's Memuchen, and there's Chavon, there's Big Son and Seresh. Ah, it's so exciting. You can teach it to kids. I've got news for you. Don't teach KLS to kids. Because it hits you immediately with cerebral concepts, and it's all encrypted, and what it's talking about is very difficult to explain. It's very difficult to get through this material. That which has been done is that which will be. That's not a Megillas Esther pasuk, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, and then he walked in, and I was like, what? Who did that? There's no character build, you know? What does that even mean? After the soul has passed through all these migrations, it's been tempered and hardened and quenched, it then should be cleansed of all the dirt and dross and impurity it picked up while it was miming mitzvahs on this earth. And it will be as good as it was when HaKadosh Baruch Hu first created it, except now it's tempered. Think about it from soul's point of view. Before, when the soul was originally created, it never wanted to leave Hashem. Then it's chucked into this earth, into a fetus, hates it, it's horrendous. Says, the Zohar says, it's like being thrown off a tall building into a deep ditch. That's how far it goes. All the way down the Empire State, then down the side of a cliff. It's like, you know, below ground zero. Now, the truth is that really the soul is useless without being tempered and quenched and formed into a knife. Tempered, quenched, heated, etc. It's utterly useless. Utterly useless without that. It's got to come down. It's got to work. And it's got to get hardened. But when it comes back, it's got to come back as clean as it was before it left. But it's just got to come back tempered and hardened and quenched and ready to be used as a utensil. Then eventually, when it's ready, it can be rejoined with a body that was similar to Adam prior to the sin. That which has been Adam Rishon before the sin will be in Olam Haba. After the resurrection, I'll give you a body as clean as his was. By this time, though, your soul will be better than his. Why will your soul be better than Adam's? Because Adam was here on one day getting the job done, right? But once we get resurrected, we've been through the mill of tempering and annealing and quenching. We're much, much stronger. We're like a knife now with a proper sheath. It's like amazing. Stronger than Adam was prior to the first sin. And he was like amazing at that stage. What has been done will once again appear in its original form. Your earthly body will once again be composed of regular matter, just like Adam. And the soul, which has been cleaned in its traversing in and out of the soul world, and tempered and hardened and quenched and made brilliant, It's now fitting to go back into such a body. But the question is why do you have to come back at all? We're the only religion. I always say, if you've heard this, I keep harping on about it. We're the only religion that says the ultimate Valhalla, Shangri-La, heaven, Valhalla, whatever the places are that you go to, is not spiritual. Everyone else says you've got to break the chain of physicality, get to a better place, and there you'll enjoy things. Not us. We say the only real enjoyment is here on this earth. Why? Because every mitzvah you ever did had a physical component. And God will be shortchanging you if he doesn't pay you for that with a physical pleasure. You've got to get a spiritual reward and you've got a physical reward. You've got to have both, otherwise God isn't rewarding you properly. You put on tefillin, your arm and your skull need a reward, and your neshama needs a reward. You took challah, your hands need a reward. You sat in a sukkah, your entire body needs a reward. You went to a mikveh, your entire body needs a reward. If you just give the soul the spiritual rewards, you're getting 50%. God's doing you out of 50% of your rightful reward. He can't do that. He's got to be completely perfect. So he's got to bring you back to a physical state where he can reward you. Those that have done Derech Hashem will know that to be an absolute key point, which is why it's one of the 13 principles of faith. That God has to resurrect you in a physical body and put you in a physical world, because if he doesn't, he's failing to give you the ultimate good, which is both spiritual and physical combined, the way that you originally made a choice to do the mitzvahs. I told you I was going to tell you about pigs. I've got to do the pig thing. You may even like it, you never know. Hold on. A whole medrash on this pasuk about pigs. Can you believe that? Amazing. Rebbe Meir went to Rome. The Romans asked for a great sage so they could ask him lots of questions. And Rebbe Meir was sent. The Rebbe Meir. Stam Mishnah like Rebbe Meir, like a regular Mishnah that's not got a name of an authorship. It's Rebbe Meir. He was descendant of Nero, Emperor Nero, apparently. It says like this. V'ain koil chadosh tachas hashomesh. There ain't nothing new under the sun. Rabbi Meir sat and he expounded. Amazing idea. He said like this. Said, why, the Romans said, why do you call a swine a chazir? It's a strange name for a pig. Why is that a strange name? Because the word chazir is from the word chazer, to return. And he said, because it is destined to restore the sovereignty of the Jews to its rightful owners. That's an amazing thing. So they said, what? How's a pig going to restore the sovereignty of the Jews? The Jew, do you want to explain that? He goes, yeah. I'll explain that to you. He says, well, it's amazing. It could be a worth coming moment. I don't know. You have to judge. It could be interesting. It could be all right. It could be worth coming. You know what I mean? Rebbe Meir said, in the future, the wolf will be sheared for its fine wool and the dog will become an expert engraver. Now, the Marazu says, all creatures will exist for the sole purpose of serving the righteous. Doesn't necessarily mean dogs are going to become masons. He's saying everything will only be there. It'll be clear, everything's for the righteous. And they said, ah, you know, the other sages said, "Is you know, how can you say that?" So Chazal, quote, they carry on in the Medrash and they say, yeah, you know what Rabbi Meir's talking about? He's talking about this. The Rabbanon said as follows, on Rabbi Meir, about the Chazir, bringing our sovereignty back. The rabbis expound it. And they said like this. In Olam Haba, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem himself, is going to make a proclamation. And he's going to make the following announcement. Let anyone who never in his lifetime partook of the flesh of a swine and come get his reward. I want to pay all those people that never ate pig. When he says that, we're talking about things that haven't happened yet in past tense, written thousands of years ago about things that are yet. So thereupon, what happens? Whole bunch of goyim turn up, all the Muslims. Loads of goyim. Oh no, we're Hindu, we're vegetarian. We've never had pork. And they come with their hands out, give us the money. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, shall these idolaters, be rewarded with two worlds? I gave them Olam Hazeh, and now they want Olam Haba. Is it not enough for them that they ate up their reward in Olam Hazeh, but now they seek to enjoy Olam Haba, which I have reserved for my children? So says Hashem, a second proclamation. The reward is only for anyone who has not partaken the flesh of Neveles or Trephos, anything that's a carrion or an animal which was rendered treif, literally torn. It became treif as part and parcel of the shechita process, let's say, or vermin, or any crawling creature. I.e., he's making this reward dependent upon scrupulousness in the mitzvah of kashrus. Let me ask you a question, people. What was the first mitzvah given to Adam Arishan? Don't eat treif. That fruit there is treif. If you would but not eat treif, you'd get into Olam Haba. And now what's he saying? Let anyone who didn't eat treif get into Olam Haba. What do the French say? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Kosh Bohol's just back on track. He goes, you know, kashrus is key. You've got to be really scrupulous kashrus. The first sin was with kashrus. The final reward will be kashrus. Amazing. This will preclude even those idolaters who never ate pig, because if one of them has not partaken of an availer or a trafer that belonged to him, he surely partook of something that belonged to his fellow. It's an interesting idea. What does that mean? Those who never partook of the flesh of a pig, but did partake of other forbidden foods, have shown they didn't refrain from eating pigs in order to fulfill God's commandment, but because they themselves were repulsed by it by some other reason, some quasi-religious or, I don't know, vegetarian, whatever the reason is, they didn't do it because of God. They did it because of their own scruples. And if they didn't eat an availer or a trafer, often that's merely because they were accustomed to eating, like not accustomed to eating meat like the Hindus, in which case they certainly partook of it while dining at the home of a friend. They didn't really care about it particularly. Amazing. We had a cleaner who married a Muslim. And our Muslims can't drink wine. They don't have alcohol. And this cleaner said, we've got a black cup at home. It's like a black glass cup that's opaque. If you put wine in there, you can drink it because Allah doesn't see it. You can have a tipple as long as he doesn't see it. Goodness gracious me. Allah can't see through black glass. It's a problem. Yeah, that's a way through it. So he said he drinks wine, but through it's got to be a black cup. Guess, you know, he just doesn't have x-ray vision. So why is the swine called a chazir? Because it will be destined to restore, chazir, return, the glory and sovereignty to its rightful owners. That which has been done will be done. There's ain't nothing new under the sun. The concept of pig, what's nothing new? It's all back to Adam. It's all back to kashrus. Who'd have thought? First things first, who kept kosher? Adam, did you keep kosher? Nope, I ate treif. Problem. Not good. Who did eat kosher? I never ate treif food. Yeah, you never ate no treif food to serve me. You ate no treif food because it wasn't on the menu where you lived. I'm saying, who kept my mitzvah of kashrus? in order to fulfill my commands. Those people can partake of Olam Haba. That's why the pig, Chazer, will be a leverage tool legally to return you back to Hashem by your refraining, not from moral, ethical, hygiene, parasitic, worm-avoiding reasons, but because Hashem told me not to do it. That's why I didn't eat it. I've been loyal. Oh, those are the ones I want. Yesh davar shiyoma. There is a thing where you might say, says Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Hey, ze chodoshu. See, this thing, it's new. Kavar ha'la elamim asher ha'yim elefaneinu. Yet it's already been in the ages that came before us. There ain't nothing new. You see something new now, and you think this is a brand new idea. But a version of that existed before. In the pyramids, there's no smoke on the ceilings by torches that they were carrying. How do they light the inside of the pyramids while they're building them? They've seen hieroglyphs where there's graffiti, where the hieroglyph artists painted themselves, painting the hieroglyphs. They were holding sticks of burning crystals. And the crystal burnt, and it made no smoke, and lit up the whole place. Says the Medrash Rabbah, the lights on the ark, on the Teva, Noah's ark, were all burning crystals. Today we've got liquid crystal technology, LED crystal technology, maybe even more. We're going to find that same technology again. We can find lit crystals, luminous crystals. There ain't nothing new under the sun. You think, oh, here's a new idea. It's old school. Interesting. Chava. Eve. Had a son. She called him Cain. What does that mean? Kinyan. I have acquired the concept of building humans. I didn't know you could do that. I've invented it. It's my idea. She had a next son. She called him Hevel. Oh, vanity. Why? I thought the idea of creating humans was mine. And now I realize it's just a natural order. I thought it was a brand new thing. I'd invented a new idea, making humans. I didn't know I could do that. But now I've done it twice. I realize the second time it's just normal. Hevel, the whole thing that I thought I'd acquired, I hadn't acquired anything. A person who's resurrected in the future might say, there's a new thing. There's a new thing because my body is a new body. So we say, excuse me, Eliyahu lives forever. It's not a new idea to have an untainted body. And if you say, maybe he doesn't, it says Eliyahu is a prime example of someone who's lived and not yet died. Serach bas Asher was also a woman that lived, and there's seven. Yonah is one of them. He didn't die again. He entered Shemayim alive. Eliezer Eved Avraham. Interesting. Chanoich, the grandson of Adam, also one of the seven people that walked into Shemayim alive. It's not a new idea that pure bodies can exist. But you might say, what about the temple? The third temple will be a brand new temple. There's nothing new under the sun. Yes, there is. This temple will be brand new. The answer is no. It says in Exodus 15:17, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established. What does that mean? There is a Beis HaMikdash on high, waiting to come downstairs. When you see it, you'll think it's new, but actually it's ancient. There's nothing actually really new, except for the mitzvahs which you perform that nobody else has done, because only you've done it. The light, the energy, the spirituality you generate by your deeds is truly new. Because no one but you has done that on this day, in this year, in this month, as it were, but you at this time. So only human activity that's done is actually truly new upstairs. That's why below the sun there's nothing new, but above the sun there is. All right, last pasuk of this thematic concept before he shifts to the last gear for this perek. The last gear for this perek kicks in on the 12th pasuk, the 12th verse, where he returns to the concept of being keheles and preaching. And this is now the last in this whole concept of resurrection and reincarnation that he's talking about. The soul needs to come back and go forth and get strong. This is the last one for this perek. This is verse 11. Ein zikaron l'rishonim v'gam la'achronim shehu lo yihyeh lahem zikaron im shehu la'achrono. Quite a dim view of things, it would seem, but actually it's not. There is no remembrance of those former times. People have forgotten Chaldea and Persia and Media. Neither shall there be any remembrance of the latter times that are to come. Other nations will come and go, and nobody remember them either. Among all those that come after, no one can say they've got lasting endurance. Whoever you are, you can't say definitely people are going to remember me. Now, even if you want to say, but let's say Elisha resurrected Habakkuk. Yeah? And Yechezkel resurrected Shevet Ephraim, the tribe, or the clan, rather, Ephraim, who left Egypt early. All of those people died. Habakkuk died a natural death. Shevet Ephraim died a natural death. So even if they were to be resurrected in former times, eventually all those people died. And there's no remembrance of those who were brought back to life in the days of Ezekiel. When Yechezkel brought back, do you remember all their names? All Shevet Ephraim's names? But those that came after, what does that mean? Those who will be brought back to in the future resurrection, they will be remembered because they're going to live eternally. That's Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Beis, Amud Beis, 92b. When you come back for the resurrection, then you stick around. Then of course you'll be remembered because you're there. God will make them a matter that they'll be almost like the malachim in the ability to endure forever. Certain malachim, not all malachim, live forever. Malachim created on day 2 are mortal, day 4 are immortal. There's certain malachim that come and go, certain malachim that stay. The rose who are resurrected are like proper full-time malachim. So if you want to turn around and say, well, I'll never be remembered. No, in your previous incarnation, right now, you will be forgotten. True, isn't that grim? Yeah, don't worry about it. Because if you're working about it correctly, you're going to get resurrected and that will be a permanent remembrance. If you really want to be remembered, make sure you get resurrected and stick it out. If you don't care, you want to eat and be merry, know now you're going to just fade into dust like everybody else. No one's going to even know what even happened. They're not going to know about Australia and England and America and Russia any more than they knew about the Celts and the Beaker folk. Do you remember the Beaker folk that came to England and drank out of cups for the first time? The Beaker folk? And they had beakers in their burial ceremonies. Know about them? They were ruling the roost in England. Ugh, faded into obscurity. So will the British. So will today. It's just everything's temporary. You can't say, well, this will last forever. It won't. That ends that thematic concept. Then Solomon comes back to close off from verses 12 through 18, one theme for the end of the first parak. And now he's got a new idea. He's got a new idea here. There is a Medrash Rabbah I wanted to share with you. It says, Ani Koheles. I'm that man called Koheles. I'm that one that grabs Kehillahs together and I preach to them. I was that man. Hayisi Melech al Yushalayim, comma. I was king over Israel. But now, be Yerushalayim. I'm only king in Jerusalem. Do you remember from the first and second psukim, the first and second verses, there's three stages to Solomon's life. There's the first stage where he was literally a world-class world leader. He sat in Jerusalem, but he was a king over all of Israel. People would come from far and wide. He was Koheles. He would preach in the street. Everyone would come to listen to him. Princes from far and wide, wise men from the east, it says, used to come in to sit at his feet. He'd give them cheer. Then he got pushed out by the king of demons while he was getting involved with him to find the Shamir worm. Which, if you go back to the first one, you'll remember the first passage, we'll discuss that. Then he went around as a commoner, knocking on people's doors, saying, I'm King Solomon. They're like, yeah, of course you are. Pull the other one. And he goes, no, really. And while he was there, he was learning from him. Then finally, he got back to his throne. But when he got back to his throne, he was only king in Jerusalem. He had a much more limited kingdom. Says the Eitz Yosef on the Medrash Rabbah, that we learn out that he was no longer as rich as he was prior to being deposed. And he wasn't as wise as he had been, for the name Koheles was given to Shlomo in reference to the words of Torah that he would speak in Kehillas, in gatherings of people. So when he says, I, Koheles, was king, that means that he was king and he was Koheles, but he's no longer Koheles now when he's speaking to you at the end of his life, because he doesn't have that authority anymore. See, this is a retrospective at the end of his life, looking back as when he was a commoner and then when he was careless. And now he's stage three Solomon, sitting as king in Jerusalem, looking back over the whole event. And this is how he's going to end the first parak. It's important to have that clear. So now he starts by repeating his own history back to you. The pleasures of the world are futile. That's what he started saying when he was Koheles. And he gathered the heads of the nations and he told them that. And once he says, I was a powerful monarch, but now I only rule as a mayor, as it were, as a king over Jerusalem. This story, by the way, of Solomon's life is actually relayed in Gittin, Samach Ches Beis, which is 68b, if you're interested in seeing that. It goes through what happened and how he got kicked off and how he got back. And if you remember when we started quoting in Aleph Aleph and Aleph Beis, 1-1 and 1-2, about the whole thing when he was going around as a commoner and what happened, we quoted a Gemara in Megillah Yud Aleph Amud Beis. That's Megillah 11b. It says that he became a commoner, then he became a king again. But when he assumed the throne for the second time, it was only over Jerusalem. Now he said, when he was Koheles, that there was no benefit from toiling under the sun. We've learned what that means now, Tachash HaShemesh means. Down here on planet Earth, where you can't see what's potting, there seems to be no benefit for labouring in matters solely performed for this world, because it's an utter waste of time. You know, you get to eat of it here and then it all goes, then you turn to dust and nobody remembers you anyway. And it's a complete useless endeavour. You enjoy it while it lasts, then it literally disappears. However, he did say that only applies to those who don't make Torah and its precepts the focal point of their life. If you make Torah and its precepts the focal point of your life, then everything can be of use. How you brush your teeth. If you're doing it, your chavrusa, your study partner, shouldn't be repulsed by your bad breath. The brushing of the teeth itself becomes a mitzvah of limud Torah. If you do it to remove chometz, Erev Pesach, becomes part of Bedikas Chometz. Preparing for Pesach. Depends on your kavana. Now you could wonder at Solomon himself and start to criticize the author. This is a possible outcome that Solomon himself is going to address. He says, really? Really, Solomon? You yourself know all this, and you worked and labored to learn Torah and even gathered people together to teach them their values, and yet you personally were made to suffer degradation by wandering door to door as a commoner, saying that you were a king and being degraded by people as being a nutter. If you're so great and the Torah is so great, how come it didn't work for you? Good question, no? That's a good question. That's a question Solomon is asking of himself, as it were, for you, the reader. He's going to give an answer. Yud Gimel. Why is it it didn't work out well for him? Well, he's going to tell you where he himself made a mistake. Venasati es libi lidresh. I applied my heart, or my mind, which means my psyche, to study. Falasur b'chochma, and seek and probe with my wisdom. All that happens, kol ashena aseh tachas hashamayim, everything that happens under the sun, physically, scientifically, botanically, biologically, chemically, what is going on? Hu inyan ra. Oh, it is an evil, sorry task to do so. Nosan elakim lifnei ha'adam, not a nice boy. That God has given man to be concerned with. When he was ousted and he became a commoner, he went round commoners and he learned from them. He learned their ways and he learned what they do. And while he was out of the palace, he felt it's got to be Minashamayim. He felt compelled to add on to his knowledge from the knowledge of the world outside. So he said, I wanted to study all the subject under the sun. Psychology, sociology, history, everything. And I wanted to see if the world is ruled by chance or divine guidance, hashkocha. And I wanted to see how other people viewed the world. How do they make sense of what's going on around them? Oh, it's a sorry task, says Solomon. Listen to this. It's unbelievable. The Medrash, the Al-Shech HaKodesh says unbelievable. The fact that you even have the choice of studying subjects other than Torah puts you at an immense disadvantage. You see, it's like this. If you know that the only thing that's really going to count is Torah and Mitzvahs, the fact that you could go to Open University and do a 3-year Bachelor of Arts in History is an intense waste of time. It's a distraction which long term will never pay its dividend. You've wasted a lot of time. You can question the way the world is run and you'll never understand why the good have to suffer or the wicked succeed. And because of that, you'll think that the whole thing is unfair and they both die in similar circumstances, much like Esav saw the world. And you'll wonder about the meaningless of suffering and oppression. And you'll not appreciate any rhyme or reason for anything that happens in the entire universe, because essentially you've wasted your time with something which won't give you the answers. Astrophysics won't tell you how to live a moral life. Neither will sociology. It'll just tell you it's probably best not to go around murdering people for your own benefit to avoid anarchy. But not why you should do that or what you should aspire to. So he went around like a traveller, a vagabond, leaving his home and knocking on people's doors, living in them, watching how they live. And he saw all the things that are done under the sun. But they didn't ponder the reason for any event. Well, they shrugged it off. These things happen. Oh well, ho hum. Get on with it. Never taking a chance as to maybe this was an outcome. Now, truthfully, only heaven knows the purpose for everything. So to an extent, there's no point trying to unravel all the secrets. But much has been revealed in the Torah as to what's going on. We even sing when we bring in Shabbos, it's Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbos. We say, a boor doesn't understand, a fool does not realize why the wicked seem to blossom and the righteous suffer. We know it's sorting out an account. It's absolutely sorting out an account. Yud-Dalad. Ra'isi es kol ha-ma'asim, shana asu tachas ha-shamesh. I've seen all the deeds that are done under the sun. Vehine, and behold, hakol hevel, it's all futile. Ur'us ruach, and a vexation. It's bothersome, an evil spirit, a hard vexation of spirit. Two things really bother Solomon. Two things are really getting under his skin. Number one, everything living is mortal and intrinsically futile. Two, even if you manage to perfect yourself before you die, the spirit will become pure and merit a reward in Olam Haba. And his toil in the world will not be for naught. He's done something of good worth. But the problem is I see that the sins and the misdeeds people do will break his spirit. How can it be said that a soul returns to this world to make up for past wrongs and achieve a spiritual purity because tesvav ma'uvas lo yuchal lesikain v'chasarin lo yuchal lahaminois? That which is wrong cannot be made right, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. We'll finish with this pasuk and then we'll stop. This is really important. Let's say a person dies and his soul is as yet unrefined. It either needs Gehenna or it needs to come back. And the wrongs that he's done are not corrected. So sometimes he may have to come back, not just to rectify a wrong, but to make up for something which wasn't performed in the correct manner during his first sojourn. Let's say he was sold a pair of tefillin that weren't kosher and he never knew. He never knew that the tefillin weren't kosher. So what did he do? He put on tefillin every day and they weren't even tefillin. So he's got to come back and put on tefillin because it wasn't his fault. He's required to do more to get himself to the level that God's got for him. You've not yet reached your target. Something happened. All is futile and a vexation of spirit. You've got to see, he says a beautiful verse in 4:1, coming up in 4:1. He says, the tears of the oppressed have none to comfort them. What does it mean? The righteous may have a miserable life sometimes, and there may be an enjoyable life for the wicked sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. And that seems desperately, deeply unfair to us. A person comes to this world with a soul whose task it is to possibly rectify misdemeanors from previous roles, and they were committed in a previous reincarnation. He'll find it difficult as he'll become insane from the sight of his eyes that he will see. That's a verse from Deuteronomy 28:34, which is the Teichacha that Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're going to go crazy with what Hashem's going to make to show you. What does that mean? You're going to become to resent life. Because you're going to realize that maybe there's not divine providence. Maybe, because I see that everyone says there isn't, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not running the world. That'll lead you to sin even more. And you'll feel empty. And you'll have doubts concerning whether or not God's really controlling the world. What about the Holocaust? Maybe God missed a beat on that one. No, he didn't. Well, maybe he did. How could you say that he didn't? Ach, I'll go eat this and I'll eat that. Uh-oh. Like a traveller, says Solomon, I set out to study all the subjects I could, but I realised that you have to fill yourself with knowledge of Tyre and make Tyre the most important thing. Otherwise, you'll be constantly dragged down by the thought that maybe God's not in control because I've done sins. And if I've done sins, I'll always be thinking about them and I'll never feel okay with myself. That which is wrong cannot be made right. I made it wrong in a previous incarnation. I feel so bad about it now. And that which is wanting, that which I haven't yet done, I haven't fixed up the tefillin, cannot be numbered. There's loads of things I'm wanting. There's loads of things I need to do. I'm never going to make it. You're making me suffer. Maybe you've made a mistake. Oh, you come to that conclusion. You'll just let go and just do any sin that comes your way. Someone says, that's a tough one. You've got to keep holding on despite the fact you've got a lot of work to do and it seems very grueling. Bez Hashem, we'll do the next three psukim and finish off this perek next time. Do a perek revision. Then if we can, start the next perek